Well, hello everyone, and welcome to episode 36 of the Going Deeper podcast. My name is JD, and I'll be your host today. This morning with me to have this conversation as we review the first lesson in the lesson series Go to Work that we've just begun this past week. Here with me this morning are Jeff.
Good morning, everybody.
And producer extraordinaire Doug.
Good morning.
So Doug is pulling double duty this morning. He's sitting behind the computer, managing the audio and planning to join us in the conversation today. So welcome, Doug.
Oh, thank you.
What's it like being behind the desk and behind the mic today?
Multitasking, I am.
An exemplary work effort, I must say.
Right, and for those of you that don't know Doug is our IT director and the manager of all of these technological elements that we've got going on here at GNG, and he usually sits in the room semi-silently, oftentimes laughing or tapping his fingers or, you know, slapping his face to stay awake, listening to us drone on. But
Making fun of us.
Or making
in the
fun of us silently, as producer types are wont to do. But this morning we're talking about the lesson series Go to Work. And Dad, just real quick before we jump into the lesson and the content and all that stuff, just give us a sense of why you felt like this was an important lesson series to kind of stick into this year.
Well, we had a number of questions on the surveys that we took last fall regarding work and the work environment and how Christians are to operate in the work environment and even how we view work. And so I really felt that there was a lot of question out there among our people about these kinds of issues. And so we wanted to address that and to try and help our people think through the Christian response to work. And when you think about the fact that most of us spend more than a third of our waking hours at work, it plays an important role in our lives. And so it's critical for us to have our faith very clear in our minds as to how we work as Christian people.
Okay. Now this morning, before we get rolling, I do just kind of want to ask a fun, interesting question. What was a job that you guys had that was particularly interesting or maybe different or something that maybe not everybody else knows about? Just what kind of job have you had in the past or experience that you would like to just kind of maybe share with the audience from your experience?
Okay. I'll give you two. My very first job, I started as a sophomore in high school, 16 years old, and worked 5 days a week at a little department store in uptown Hillsboro called G.C. Murphy. And some of the older folks in town might remember that store. But my job, I was the janitor. And for 2 hours every night, 5 days a week, I would go in and I would clean the bathrooms and the toilets and sweep the floors and clean the floors. That was my very first job. But then when I was in college, the job I had there and worked there for 3 summers was I was actually a union member of the United Iron Workers Union, and I worked in the steel factory bending rebar. That was my job there. So very nice job to have, by the way, because it was union, and so it paid very well, and they held my job every summer. So a lot of benefits to that.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
Yes. I was grateful for that.
Now, were you a night shift guy?
For 2 of the 3 summers, I was night shift. In the first summer that I was there, we were extremely busy, and so it was not unusual for me to work 12 to 14 hour shifts, and which was difficult because it was 75 miles from home. So I had a 75 mile drive one way. And when you're working a 12 or a 14, that is a long day.
Yeah. Well, Doug, what give us a sense of some of your experiences.
I, too, started off in a department store.
Really?
Yes, I did. And like Jeff mentioned, I did clean restrooms, which is probably the worst job I ever had in my life. You didn't elaborate on yours, but mine was not a good experience. So after that, then I did a stint with an alarm company, and that was even more interesting. You get people I had to go out after alarm drops went off and reset alarm systems, and you were always right in the midst of when something had just happened. And like one guy, for instance, was robbing a Rink's department store, which was a department store I had worked at previously. He was leaving the building when the alarm went off, and he ran so hard he didn't realize that the electronic doors, he went, tried to go out the end door, and ended up was running so fast he busted the whole frame out of the building. So the manager had to stay there all night because they couldn't even lock the store up. That was two of the interesting jobs that I've had. Everything else has been tech, but that's where I started at.
How about you, Jay? That's,
So, my first job was as a server at Ponderosa, not particularly interesting. I would say maybe perhaps for the sake of some of our listeners, the most ironic job I've ever had is not long after I started college, because I worked at Ponderosa for the summers before I went to college. But my first year or two of college, in the summers when I would come home, my job was actually kind of a pseudo farmhand for Doug Savage, one of our leadership team members. He had just built a house out on some farmland that he owns outside of Greenfield. And my job basically every day was to go out to his house and do whatever he asked me to do, you know. So, you know, kind of help out in the barns, you know. I scrubbed and stained his deck. I mean, all kind of just random manual labor stuff that Doug needed done. We helped build a retaining wall. Again, all of this sounds very ironic for anybody who knows me that I've actually participated in said activities. But I spent a couple of summers doing that for Doug. And it was a fun experience because Doug and I have always been friends, and he was a lot of fun to just get to hang out with and talk to, because obviously with his job in education, the summers were times where I did a lot of projects on my own, but there were numerous things that he and I were working side by side and talking and stuff. So that was a fun job and an interesting job to learn some new stuff and to be involved in projects that I certainly wasn't going to do around our house.
Well, I take it that you never had to bale hay.
I don't think he ever had me baling hay. He's more into cattle for the most part. From what I was around for, and so that was not. We never baled hay in my time there.
Well, sitting here thinking about that is one of the jobs I had when I moved to Hillsboro.
Yeah, I did. I did that in high school.
Oh man, it always had to be the hottest day of the year.
Mm-hmm. Tough jobs. Now, Dad, you spent this Sunday. So let's kind of dig into the content from this past Sunday. This lesson was really kind of a sweeping topical study of basically a whole biblical view of work. I mean, it was a lot in that lesson, and so you're really trying to basically just hit the highlights of what the Bible has to say about work, just in general, and you hit a lot of different topics. Were there any that you felt like, well, maybe you didn't get to quite cover that at the length that you would have liked to, or there wasn't enough time to build a lot of content into a particular area? Is there anything that kind of got less attention than you might have liked?
Yeah, I was concerned about the whole sacred versus secular distinction. I felt like that's become such a part of our culture and our way of thinking. We tend to think that that life is really divided into two very different aspects, and that's really not a New Testament concept at all.
Right.
You know, when you think about, for example, 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, "Whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God." Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's a much more holistic and unified look at our lives, where we're to glorify God Sunday through Saturday, not just Sunday, and in our work life Monday through Friday or whatever is not something separate that's different or somehow less important,
right,
than what we do on Sunday. And I don't think people realize that kind of a dichotomy or a dualism is really a very ancient idea. It goes all the way back to Plato and Socrates and those guys. And we don't really think about that, but that's very foreign to the New Testament.
Well, and I think it could very easily be argued foreign to the whole of the Bible, because certainly the Jews who wrote, well, I mean, obviously Jewish people wrote basically the entire Bible. But you focus on the Hebrew scriptures, right? The Old Testament.
Sure.
There was a very strong sense of we are embodied creatures. Mm-hmm. And that in and of itself was not a bad thing. The Greeks were really the ones who kind of philosophically played around with this idea that there is a body ultimately to be rejected and a soul that lives forever. That's really kind of at odds with what Scripture teaches in a lot of ways. The thrust of Scripture seems to be that we're created with a body, and after our death we will have a new body, and that it's a physical, working, active existence is not bad.
True.
Whereas for Plato and the Greeks and many of those philosophers, it was like, oh, we're in this rough, difficult world, but ultimately that's to be rejected
and escaped from.
Escaped from, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not really the idea of the Bible.
No, especially, and you see it especially in Jesus, because you have a bodily resurrection,
right?
And I think that dichotomy plays into our thinking quite a lot, and that's why you can see, and surveys indicate this, that quite often the behavior of Christians Monday through Friday is not that different than the world at large,
right?
Because they do view life as two separate realms. Mm-hmm. You have what you do for church and what you do on Sunday, and then the rest of the week is different. And that kind of thinking has to be overcome.
How do you think that impacts the way we work? If we think that, okay, if we're Christians and we think, oh wow, Sunday's holy and all that kind of stuff, right? And then we've got this idea. Not necessarily ascripturally, but we've got this idea that, you know, stuff we do for God or stuff we do with God is really good and important. Stuff we do at work or our work lives are these mundane things, ultimately, to be escaped from either by retirement or death is not as important or not as positive or not as long lasting. What impact does that have on us?
I think there are two impacts. I think first, the first impact is, if you really have that view, then you tend not to bring your best self to your work. You don't give it the very best effort you have. You could look at how you work, and if you were honest, you would have to say, I don't really glorify God with the way I work. Okay, that's one thing. The other aspect that I think is even more dangerous than that is that sometimes we allow our morality to suffer at work. Hmm. We're more willing to cut corners. We're more a compromise. I think it's fascinating. It's a very, very famous business writer, a guy by the name of Stephen Covey. And he did a number one best-selling book entitled The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And one of the things that he did in that book is he did an in-depth study of success literature going all the way back to 1776 when you know, America declared its independence. And he found a very startling turn of the way success literature has been written, and it really did a major change in the middle of the last century. And what he said was, the success literature of the past 50 years was superficial, filled with techniques and quick fixes, with social band-aids and aspirin. In stark contrast, almost all the literature in the first 150 years or so focused on what could be called the character ethic as the foundation of success. Things like integrity, humility, fidelity, temperance, courage, justice, patience, industry, simplicity, modesty, and the golden rule. Thus, in a little over a generation, we have largely abandoned the enduring character qualities that shaped our history. Mm-hmm. Now you think about this, and if you're as old as I am, you can remember the day when if you shook your hand, you shook somebody's hand and said, I will do this, you knew it would get done, mm-hmm. because a person's word was his bond. Today, you have to have a 20-page contract written by a lawyer to ensure that business person you're dealing with will actually do what they said they would do.
Yeah.
Massive difference. And part of that is because as Christian people, sometimes we don't bring our best self into the workplace, and sometimes we don't bring our ethics with us either.
Right.
And that's devastating. Mm.
I think what happens a lot, too, is people at work will try to gain acceptance. So they try to become a little bit like the people that they're hanging around.
Right.
Which is a bad thing. So sometimes their Christian values does not carry through the work week because of that. So right. I've seen that happen lots of times.
Well, we're social. We're social beings, and the reality is we have a desire to kind of fit in and meet the approval of individuals around us. And, mm-hmm. and one of the things that becomes really devastating, especially in a work environment that oftentimes, I mean, if you think about it, there are a lot of places that are not awesome, healthy places to work.
True.
And so the reality is we can be caught up in behaviors that are inappropriate, or we can just kind of be trained to do things a certain way and not stop to think about mm-hmm. the implications of what we're doing.
Yeah.
That's a real concern. I know I came out of a counseling environment, and productivity is a particular it's a particular element in counseling organizations whereby the agency sets a particular productivity standard. In other words, you have to be billing X percent of the time. You know, so when you're at work, you know, now at our agency, that productivity standard from a field perspective was actually relatively low. You know, at FRS, the productivity standard when I was there was only like 50%. So in other words, you had to be billing 50% of your time. The other 50% of your time could be, you know, writing notes, charting, all the kind of, you know, ancillary aspects of the counseling process. But other organizations that I knew, I mean, they were requiring a billing productivity standard of 80 to 90%. So the tendency to try to fudge numbers in an 80 to 90% productivity sure. standard,
sure.
significant, really significant. And so, you know, the the temptations and the values in the workplace, oftentimes we take them from the workplace and not from Scripture.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I think as Christian people, we have to take our Christian values and our ethic into the workplace. We have to, because that's that passage of Scripture we read earlier. Whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Mm-hmm. I had a buddy in law school and great lawyer, but he was with a firm in downtown Cleveland. And one day a woman called him up, and she had bought Gerber baby food for her child. And when she opened the bottle, the jar, and was starting to feed it to the child, she discovered shards of glass in the baby food. Well, she calls the law firm. They transfer to my buddy, and he talks to her, and she's like, you know, is there something we can do about this? And he said, well, because you discovered it, there's no injury. There's no harm done to your child, so it's not like you can sue them and get money. But what we need to do is we need to get the batch number off the bottle. I'll contact Gerber immediately. We'll notify them, and they can recall that batch, okay? Well, he prepared a letter and everything and all this kind of stuff. And because he was a lower-level lawyer in the firm, all his mail had to go through one of the partners to be approved. And the partner called him in the office and said, we're not sending this out. And my buddy's like, why not? And he said, who's paying us to do this? And think about that. I mean, wait a minute. You have no sense of the greater good of the community.
The common good, yeah.
The common good, which we talked about on Sunday morning. And it's like your ethic got left at home that day. When you can make a decision like that. So what my buddy did was he went ahead, did it on the firm letterhead, went out and bought his own stamp and sent it. Because he said, I'm not having that on my conscience.
Right. Wow. That's a fascinating and kind of semi-condemning thing, because, you know, the reality is any one of us in the right set of circumstances could make decisions like that.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us have. I mean, the reality is, you know, the people make bad decisions all the time, unethical decisions all the time. And sometimes it's because they've gotten caught up in, you know, who's paying us. And other times it can be an unthinking thing. You know, I just don't stop to think about what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got to remember, I think, the thrust of the lesson was we have to remember that work is a thing ordained by God, and we have to do it to the glory of God, per the focus verse for this series.
Yeah, and you know, it's not just it's I mean, obviously it's built into the fact that we are image bearers, and that was one point I really tried to hit hard. That according to Genesis, God is the original worker. And when he created us in his image. And that's why there are some passages in the Bible that many in our culture today might find harsh. I mean, you think about 2 Thessalonians 3:10. It says, the one who is unwilling to work shall not eat. I mean, it's that blunt. And you think about, in the history of America, Captain John Smith, back when Jamestown Colony was founded. I mean, he had to get that blunt with some of the people there, because apparently they came to America with this sense that, hey, we're in England. I was aristocracy. I don't work. These lower people work. Well, no. If you don't work, you don't eat. And that's one of the things I think people, when they read the story of Ruth, find sometimes in our culture a little disconcerting.
Right.
Because even though farmers in the Old Testament were required by Mosaic law to leave some of their crop behind, they weren't required to harvest it. They weren't required to prepare it for the poor. The poor were expected to come and work to get it.
I think you made the comment before we started rolling. You know, Ruth is poor and desperate, but from a biblical perspective, she was still expected to work.
Mm-hmm.
Let's kind of ask that question because we have, I mean, we have a reality in our culture that there are many who don't work that could.
Yes.
And we've created a system. Whether you agree with it or not, I'm not sitting here trying to have that political discussion. But whether you agree with the welfare state and the current system or not, the reality is when people don't work at something, they're robbed of some very beneficial things.
Oh yeah.
What do you think some of those things are that we're robbed of when we don't work?
Self-worth. Mm. I really believe that people who are unproductive, people that don't have something that they are producing and accomplishing, it robs them of a sense of self-worth. I really believe that. Mm-hmm. I've seen it too many times in people that I represented and people that I've known who have for whatever reason got into that point where they're basically subsidized, their existence is subsidized by the government. And it's sad for them. It really is. And it's sad to see them in that position. And it's not because they're physically unable or mentally incapable of working. I tried to make that a very clear distinction Sunday morning, because there are those who are in that situation. I think it's far more rare than what we see happening in our culture.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, on the other side of that, there are some that feel that they're accomplishing a lot by being able to cheat the system. And I've seen it, and I worry about those type of people because they feel that their self-worth and, you know, they're being effective citizen by being able to game the system.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, you know, it's just sad.
Well, and I know that in my particular previous profession and in the legal profession as well, I mean, oftentimes we are seeing a lot of people, not only those people, but we're seeing a lot of people who are, you know, for me, it was the Medicaid thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Effectively free health care, right? Mm-hmm. Because mental health counseling and drug and alcohol abuse counseling can come out of the Medicaid process. You're seeing people in repetitive, you know, time after time through the counseling process who struggle to get better and who struggle to be a fully functioning member of society, getting into legal trouble, etc. The reality is when we don't have something to do that blesses the common good, as you said on Sunday, the reality is often we will make self-destructive choices.
True.
Yes.
True.
I've seen it a lot where you've got people in a position where they don't have anything to do. They don't have any value they offer to people beyond themselves. And therefore, pleasure or self-gratification becomes the only thing that they're chasing on a day in, day out basis, and that gets self-destructive really fast.
Yeah, there's, I mean, and I know this is going to sound extremely harsh, but if you're not producing, you are by default parasitic.
Mm.
And that's self-destructive in many ways.
Right.
And you can't get around that. And so when I say productive, I'm not necessarily even saying that you have to be at a job where you're getting paid.
Right.
Okay. But you produce something. It's like it's I tried to draw that distinction with the stay-at-home mom or dad or people who are retired, but they don't just quit. They don't just sit at home doing nothing. They volunteer. They become candy stripers at the hospital or they work in food kitchens or whatever. I mean, retirement is not just I'm opting out. It's I'm applying myself in other ways to accomplish things of value. Mm-hmm. And I think that's critically important.
Well, I think human beings need to be challenged, period. So if you're not working, just sitting at home doing nothing or whatever like that, you're not being challenged. That leads to a whole world of other issues. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So working gives you challenges that you must, you know, overcome every day, whether it's just your basic job or whatever. But yeah, if you're not being challenged, you're going to have issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the self-worth is a really important element, because we talk in our culture. I mean, we have a self-esteem culture, if you will. You know, we're constantly trying to protect people from slights to their self-esteem. We're constantly trying to keep people from having to experience, you know, negative feelings. And we see all this. I mean, I had a friend of mine post something on Facebook that was all like the, you know, let go of all the people that make you feel bad about you and just think about good things and all this kind of stuff. And I just honestly sat there like reading it and I didn't comment on it, because I think to some degree there's no point in picking a fight with somebody. But the reality is, like, I felt bad for him. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt bad for him, because that perspective makes no sense. I mean, when we don't produce, we can't feel good about ourselves, because we weren't made to be non-entities from a social, a civic, a spiritual, a work perspective. We weren't made to be that. You know, our culture is really the first culture in the history of the world where you can wake up every day and entertain yourself for the entire day. I mean, outside of children, we're the only culture that even attempts that. Mm-hmm. You know, with TV and, mm-hmm. you know, movies. I mean, the internet. I mean, like, we do this to ourselves. So many of the cultures around the world that don't have access to some of the things that we have, don't have some of the same kinds of self-esteem problems, don't have the same kind of suicidality rates, don't have the same kinds of depressive behaviors, because the only thing they can do is go do something, produce something. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that we talked about very much in brief on Sunday, and you talked about just a moment ago the cultural emphasis on retirement here, mm-hmm. in our world. It's almost as if many of us are working for the day we don't have to work.
Right.
You hear it talked about. You know, when we did the financial series back in February, we studied a book called God and Money, and one of the authors, prior to really delving deeply into his relationship with God and money, his password was retire at 50. You know, like his whole goal in life, mm-hmm. was to get through working so that he could party from 50 to whenever he died.
Right.
And we seem as a culture obsessed with this idea of retirement. And yet on Sunday, unfortunately, in brief, the final point was there's going to be work in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
So what many of us are looking at almost as the ultimate eternal retirement is going to entail work, right? So how on earth are we to view, from our world, you know, our perspective, and our culture, the idea of retirement and the idea of what we're going to do when we're done?
You know, I think that retirement is an interesting phenomenon, because it really has only become a thing, for the most part, in the United States within the last 50 to 75 years.
Right.
Prior to that, it was unknown. in human history, really. And so it's interesting that now in that short amount of time in regard to human history, it's become such a thing here. And it's become like the ultimate escape.
Right.
You know, if I can just get to retirement, then I have no worries. I don't have to worry about going to a job every day. I don't have to worry about a boss that I don't like or having to do stuff I don't really want to do, that kind of thing. It's an escapist mentality in some respects. Now, I do think that for those that have worked for that and they're in that position, I think the issue for folks that are there is now what am I going to do that is productive and beneficial,
right?
And accomplishes something.
I think the question for us now is like, what if you're a Christian and you're approaching retirement age or you're thinking hard about retirement? What's the kind of retirement we should be thinking about?
Yeah, because there is no retirement from the kingdom of God.
Right.
If we honestly believe that Jesus is the hope of the world and that the job or the work, if you will, of the church is to reach as many people with the good news of Jesus Christ as possible, then you have a full-time job.
Forever.
Forever.
Right. Right.
So get after it.
Mm-hmm.
Like 1 Corinthians says, work at it with all your might and do it for the glory of God.
Right. And so for us it's I guess to be careful and cautious and as upfront as possible. No, we're not saying you can't retire from your job.
Right.
Or that it's exactly unwise to save some for retirement or things of that nature. There's not saying any of that. The reality is that because you stop producing on a civic end, so to say, you know, maybe you work at a manufacturing plant for a number of years, or you're a professional teacher and you reach, you know, that 30-year mark or whatever, or 35 years, and you're eligible to retire. That doesn't necessarily mean that just because you stop doing that job, that God has exempted you then from doing the job that you're called to do spiritually in the world in which we live.
Sure. At that point, the question becomes, now how do I redirect my effort and my time more fully into expanding the kingdom of God?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the thing. And unfortunately, what I see in a lot of churches is I see older Christians saying, well, it's time for the young ones to step up, so I'm opting out.
Right.
And they stop serving. And it's devastating for churches because we lose the experience and the wisdom that these people have gained over the years.
Right.
That the young leaders and the young volunteers coming up could learn so much from.
Right.
But they've decided to take a seat and keep their mouth shut. And that's devastating for the church.
Right. Right. And that wisdom and that ability to help those who are maybe now lifting more of the organizational weight or the effort of ministry or whatever, those people don't always have the ability, because they're stuck in the moment, to kind of see the bigger picture. And those folks who have been through the wars, who have kind of, and I know I've experienced it just on a personal level, dealing with, you know, being a part of, being, you know, the youngest member on the leadership team, of having a whole bunch of people that are older than me by enough to have experienced a lot of the challenges that will come with church life. And so where I'm freaking out or I'm going, what on earth is this? There are others that are going, oh yeah, that happens every few years. Oh yeah, somebody's going to get mad about that. Oh yeah, it's no big deal. You know, like, and they're seeing it from this like 15 or 20 years of being a part of, you know, the leadership team or whatever. And they're seeing it from the, oh yeah, we've had like five of these, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm going, what in the world? The world's crashing in. Yeah. You know, like
this is the end of the world,
right? You know, no, it's not. Like it's never going to get worse than this. Oh, that's nothing. You know, like but you have their ability to kind of guide you to think differently about the situations that you're in, and man, the impact of those folks is so huge, and oftentimes they get to the end of maybe their physical ability to contribute, or they get to the end of their work life and they begin to question like, oh, I must not have anything to offer anymore. I must not have any value. And the reality is there's a ton of value there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think too that the church should strive to pull them in and keep them active.
Right.
Otherwise we will lose them.
Right. I mean, one of my favorite things about GNG is just seeing the number of people who are obviously well into, you know, work-related retirement that are significantly involved
here. Oh, yeah.
You know, we've got some people that, you know, come in on a weekly basis to clean, or there's a whole group right now down in the other room making dresses for people in Haiti. The reality is that we're talking about seamstressing being quite the lost art in our, you know, current world.
Sure.
There are people that carry that skill, and now that's making a meaningful difference in our world right now. And it's because there are opportunities and there are known opportunities for people who are, you know, maybe not working anymore, but there's work to be done.
Mm-hmm. You know, I heard a speaker give a fascinating explanation of the fourth commandment, which is the Sabbath day, and keep it holy. And his take on it was, you know, we tend to focus on the whole rest thing, the whole rest aspect of the Sabbath. Mm-hmm. But we forget the fact, and I tried to hammer on this a little bit on Sunday, that it begins with 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, when you think about the fact that God was the original worker and just the creativity that he brought to his work when he created the world, he said, perhaps what we should think of is we should think of the fourth commandment more in terms of, it's like God is saying to us as his children, 6 days you get to play with your toys and you get to do whatever you want with your toys. But on that seventh day, you got to put your toys away because there's something else you need to do as well. And you need to commune with me, and you need to focus on me and our relationship, that kind of thing. But for 6 days, you play with your toys, have fun, create, produce, accomplish things because of the worth that brings to you, because you're created in my image. And for 6 days, I created all this stuff you see. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just thought that was a fascinating way to look at it, because going to work should be something that we take joy in and that we bring our best self to and we create. And you know, I know that for some that may seem very difficult, because perhaps you're stuck in a job that's mundane or that's difficult or that you don't feel is really fulfilling. And I think number one, you have to check your attitude about how you view your work. Because even if maybe it's mundane, or maybe you feel like it's monotonous, or your boss isn't the boss you wish that person was, that work still affords you a paycheck at the end of the week that puts food on your table and supports your family and pays your bills, keeps your electric on and your water running. Mm-hmm. There's something to be thankful for in that.
Well, and it's and regardless of whether or not it's especially fun or, you know, as meaningful as we'd like our work to be, the reality is it also affords us the opportunity to do the mission that God called us to do in the first place, which is be a light in the world for those who are far from Him.
Yeah, you know, I think if we viewed our work as a divine assignment, mm-hmm. Okay, now maybe I'm not going to stay in this job forever, okay? And maybe I'm even currently looking for other employment, but right now I'm here. Mm-hmm. And so let's look at this as a divine assignment that God's placed me here for this time frame. How can I shine my light? Mm-hmm. That's, and I think if we begin to view it that way, our attitude about it would probably change, and our work product would probably improve, and the impact we had on others in the work environment would undoubtedly go way up. Mm-hmm.
Well, guys, we hope this has been a helpful conversation to you and something that has maybe sparked your interest or given you some things to think about. This coming Sunday is another lesson in the Go to Work series, and this one's going to focus much more on the relationship between bosses and employees. And how whether you are a boss or whether or not you are an employee, how that relationship you are to engage in those relationships as a Christian. And so we're going to talk a lot about that. I know that that will probably be interesting to many of you because you are either a boss or you are an employee dealing with a boss. Either way, the reality is there are some important things that the Bible has to say about those relationships, and we're going to talk about those a little bit more this coming Sunday. Guys, we hope, again, that this has been helpful, and if you have any questions, we would be really excited to take those questions and try to talk about them on the podcast. So if you want to shoot us anything, you can send it to info@goodnewsgathering.org on the email side, or if you want to just drop it into a communication card and put that in the jars in the back of the auditorium on Sunday, we would be happy to answer any questions or deal with any feedback that you guys have for us. We hope that you've had a good day, and we will talk to you again soon. Take care, guys.
Take care, everybody.
See y'all later.